good afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com, and today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest today is author and social commentator Harold Covington. Harold, are you there? Well, good. Well, first thing I have to do is I have to apologize because Harold was supposed to be my guest on Friday, and I had some mechanical issues on a vehicle that I drive that left me stranded on the side of the road. And the good news is that if I would have followed my daily pattern, I would have went north and I would have had to go through some steeper mountain grades instead of going south where it's all flat and level. So fortunately, I lucked out. I dodged a bullet. But let me give you a little bit of history here, and maybe the listeners can appreciate this. But I bought this vehicle used. It's got the original 12-cylinder Cummins turbo diesel engine in it, 12-valve Cummins turbo diesel, which was the agricultural motor. It's the most robust engine there is, and there's no electronics in this vehicle. There's a radio that's electronic, and there's a speedometer that has an electronic connection, and there's a part on the starter that is electronic. But that's it. There's nothing else. So there's no chance to doing Boston brakes. Since when I bought the vehicle, it had a bad master cylinder, so I replaced the master cylinder in December of 2010, January of 2011, sometime like that. Since I've started with Rinse Radio, November of last year, I've had to replace three master cylinders. Three, count them, three. That just seems anomalous to me that I would have to replace three master cylinders. That's not what happened to me on Friday. On Friday, I was driving down the road and a universal joint failed, because a retaining clip had been removed from it. And as my mechanic friend was working on the vehicle, trying to put the new U-joint in, he said, let me check your other ones. All three of the U-joints in that drivetrain had the retaining clips removed. And that kind of gives me a hint that maybe I'm suffering some form of harassment or something is going on here about this. I don't really know what to make of it. But you couple that with the fact that about a week and a half before, on a Thursday night, my dog was perfectly healthy when I went to bed. And when I got up in the night, he was severely distressed and throwing up all night and was sick for 2 days. I really think that maybe the things I say are offending some people and they're trying to give me some not so subtle hints that maybe I better change my tune and shut up. Well, guys, it ain't going to work. In fact, if that's your A game, forget about it, because, you know, I had two choices. I could either roll this over to the police, or I could roll this over to my business partners at Adamus Group, and my business partners at Adamus tell me that they're going to take this to a whole new level. So you guys either better pick up your game or get off the field. That's it. That's how it is. So that being said, Harold, how are you? I apologize for having to stiff you on Friday.
Oh, not at all. I mean, I get it. I suffer from strange, odd little occurrences like this myself. If I could interject there, my personal guess is that when you really ticked him off was when you reported on that JT Reddy thing down in Arizona. But
that was one of the things that I've probably ticked him off about. Well, they just killed Michael Hastings. That's pretty obvious. I mean, I've read several different issues with this. I've heard from my contacts that they feel that they can't tell me how, why they feel this, but they think that his car was hit by a Predator drone firing some sort of a missile to take out his car. But the fact that a new Mercedes C250 does not blow up when it hits a tree, and the fact that the engine was catapulted out of the car 180 feet away from where the impact was tells me that that was quite an impact. There was some explosive device was employed. Whether it was a bomb attached to his car or whether it was a missile, some explosive device struck his vehicle. You look at all of that with all of these other things that are going on, and you look at who our current Department of Homeland Security Secretary is. That's the woman who I wanted to displace back in 2006 where I ran for governor of Arizona. And these people hold grudges. I'm sorry, but they hold grudges. Was I kind to her? No, I was harsh to her. But I'm no harsher to her than I am to anybody else who I think is committing treason against this country. And I really think she's part of the problem.
What you have to bear in mind, Mike, is that let's say that this guy, Michael Hastings, was killed and that Andrew Breitbart was killed by an injection of digitalis or something like that. Okay, all that sounds very sinister and spy-like, but you have to understand that under the present law of this country, specifically the National Defense Authorization Act of 2011, if the President of the United States ordered both those men executed informally, so to speak, it would be perfectly legal. We have no way of knowing if drone attacks are being ordered in this country on American citizens. Eventually, I'm sure if there's enough of them, something will come out because somebody will make a slip somewhere. But again, so what if this is happening? It's all legal under these laws that have been passed over the past 12 years.
You know, Harold, I have to interject here. They may have passed unconstitutional laws, but you know, the Constitution is the law of the land. The Constitution is the framework by which Obama and every congressman, every senator, the Supreme Court, all of them, by which they hold their seat, okay? Without the Constitution, they are just a bunch of rabble. That's all they are. They're nothing more than thugs. They can pass any law they want. It doesn't make it lawful.
What I'm getting at here, Mike, is that in their eyes, it's legal. And if they do this stuff, if they kill Michael Hastings or they killed Andrew Breitbart or they kill you or me, no one is going to do anything about it, which in the cynical sense is the ultimate test of legality. I probably take a much more jaundiced view of these things maybe than you do, but frankly, in my view, legality is what you can get away with, at least as far as our present government goes. They figure if they can get away with it, then it's legal. I like the old Latin saying,
I'm going to pull a little logic jujitsu on you then, because if what's legal is what you can get away with, then we don't have 50 million illegal aliens in this country. We have 50 million new citizens, whether or not the Congress passes anything. I mean, that's because they've gotten away with it. Our government hasn't stopped it.
What we've got in this country, Mike, is 50 million foreigners who don't belong here. Whether they're legal or illegal, I don't particularly care. I don't differentiate between legal and illegal aliens. If they are third world foreigners who are not of our race, then they do not belong on this continent. I don't care if they have a green card or not. It's not so much, Mike, about having to get rid of illegal aliens. It's about having to get rid of Mexicans, third worlders, Haitians, Chinese,
Somalis,
alien elements of destroying society.
Yes, name it. They all need to go. And we need to purge our country and put ourselves back to what our forefathers had in mind. This is certainly not what they had in mind when they founded this great nation.
No, absolutely not.
Well, anyway, the reason I wanted you on last Friday and consequently today was to discuss this this immigration issue. But we've got some other things here. I need to point something out to people here. I get a copy of The Economist magazine. I think it's pretty funny. I want people to understand just how owned this nation is by Israel. Called Jacob Frenkel, chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase International, was appointed as a governor to the Bank of Israel, a surprising choice given he was not among the front runners to take over from Stanley Fischer, who is retiring for 8 years. This is the second time in the job for Mr. Frenkel. He led the Israel Central Bank during the 1990s, when he was credited with bringing rampant Israeli inflation under control. So there you have it, folks. You think we're not a Zionist-occupied government? I think we're a Zionist-occupied every major institution we have.
No, but there's no question about that. I mean, where do I begin? Jews in the Federal Reserve alone would fill a book. There has not actually been a non-Jewish head of the Federal Reserve since its inception in 1913.
Okay, well,
we handed our money over to the Jews.
Well, hold that point, Harold. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes more about this, because I want to explore this issue in depth. Good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com, and today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. And let's talk a little bit more about this, because it's time that people realize that we have been thoroughly infiltrated by the same type of Bolshevik Jews that destroyed Russia, that destroyed China, that were responsible for the Khmer Rouge, Cambodia. And that's what's coming to America here. It is upon us, and it's up to us. We, the people, have to go root this poison, this cancer out of our society and expel it from this country or kill them outright, one or the other.
Mike, if you read my novels, then you know what I think the solution is.
Yes.
I suppose that it all depends on whether or not we still believe that it is possible to take back the entire country from sea to shining sea, somehow expel something on the order of 100 million undesirable people who have been gumming up the works for the past 70 years. And I guess in many people's minds revert to the 1950s or something of this kind. I frankly do not believe that this is possible. And I don't think a rational case can be made that it's possible. Therefore, the only solution that the white man has, if he hopes to survive on this North American continent, is some form of white separatism, some form of white nationalism based on an independence movement, something regional that will give us a territorial base, a homeland, an ethno-state, a country of our own, where there will be only white people, no Jews, no blacks, no illegal aliens, Mexican or any other kind, no homosexuals, and no Jews, of course. Well, I think I said that, but none of the people who have been destroying the culture and the country and the economy and our people for the past
They've been destroying the entire fabric of the nation.
Yeah, in addition to which, I don't know if you've ever taken a look at our proposed constitution for the Northwest American Republic, but we specifically ban two other classes of people because they have simply caused so much trouble in the past and there is no actual logical reason for them. One of these classes of people is attorneys. It will be unconstitutional in the NAR for anyone to accept money or anything of value for acting as an advocate in a legal case or legalist, providing legal assistance, etc., etc. The second is basically it will be illegal to accept any money or anything of value for performing an office of the clergy, being a minister, a priest, something like that. We are seeking to eliminate two classes of people that have been instrumental in the destruction of Western civilization for the past 100 years. Lawyers and the professional clergy. We are not attacking religion, as far as we're not attacking law, we want to have as little law as possible. But these two classes of people have to be removed from the entire socio-political economic equation in the Northwest Republic, and this is what we have to recognize. Our problems are caused by people who act in certain ways because it is their nature to do so. These people cannot be corrected, they cannot be changed. We cannot expect blacks to turn into white people, as we've found out ever since 1865. We cannot expect Mexicans and other third world aliens to adapt to our ways and suddenly become nice, charming little Americans that are no different from this whole idea that the races of mankind are all cut from the same cookie cutter, just from different colored dough, is insane. There is no racial equality. There is no... How can I put this?
Well, Harold, that's a good point, because I want the listeners to look this up. Look up the name Franz Boas, B-O-A-S. He was the anthropologist who rewrote all of what was known about anthropology to create this image of it's just different color cookie dough, like you just said. I think that's a great analogy, by the way, because it's not. They're very different. And he threw out hundreds of years of scientific study, collected wisdom, to announce that it's just different color cookie dough. But he was part of the Frankfurt School, which is the source of all cultural Marxism in this country.
This is a large part of the reason that we have become such a mess over the past 60 years, especially. I say 60 years because I was born in more or less the same year that is Brown versus Board of Education. We are basing our entire society on a false premise, and that is that the races of mankind are in some way equal and of equal worth and merit, and that is just plain not true. Blacks are different from white people, and in many respects, blacks are inferior to white people. And I think the most ridiculous modern example of this I can think of is this business with test scores in schools. And you have these huge metropolitan school districts like Atlanta, where the teachers are getting together on weekends and after school to have, in essence, fraud parties to get the test scores up. Because federal money, which is allocated to these school systems, is based on one thing and one thing only, and that's these stupid test scores. And since blacks in, say, Detroit, Atlanta, Miami, wherever, cannot score as high on these tests as whites,
it goes back to the whole premise of IQ. And there are racial differences with IQ. Anybody who's read the book The Bell Curve understands this, and that book was very well done, very scientific, impeccably scientifically constructed. And yet it was called a racist book. I mean, I'm sorry, the truth isn't racist. It's not how it works. We have another break. Be right back in a couple of minutes, folks, more with Harold Covington. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com, and today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. But Harold, before we go back to our conversation, I just got an email from a listener that told me, he said, Mike, how is your health? If your health's good, you know, tell people this out there. So there's a record. And I just had a physical not long ago. You know, my blood pressure is about 115 over 80. So it's perfect. My cholesterols are all very low. My resting heart rate's around 65 beats a minute. So I'm very healthy that way. I don't drink and drive. If I have a single glass of wine, I will not get behind the wheel of a car. I just won't do it. It's too easy to set up. My vehicle is mechanically sound. It just had new brake job all the way around. It's got a new brake master cylinder in it. Actually, the third one since November 1st. That's been in there. It has new universal joints. Has a new transmission, has a new clutch. Everything on that vehicle is sound. So if there's anything that happens to me, folks, if by some mysterious way that I just up and keel over or die, you know it was probably something nefarious. And I just got that from a listener to give that plug after our earlier comments there.
Well, anyone who opposes this regime is at risk of some kind of unofficial execution of this kind. And like I said, under their own laws and in their own eyes, it's perfectly legal. So it's just a matter of concealing the fact from the public that they're doing this. I have a sneaking suspicion that one of these days we're going to have an Edward Snowden type who is going to step forward and say, I just can't handle this anymore, all these secrets, and he will reveal that the Obama regime has been murdering American citizens probably almost since he came in.
I think it goes back further than that. I mean, we have to remember that Obama did not construct the police state. George W. Bush constructed the police state. Obama is merely the next guy who's in the cockpit there driving the thing. But George W. Bush put this police state together, and I want to point something out. If you look at the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, you look at what happened in the Communist Revolution of China, and again in the Cultural Revolution of China, you look what happened in Cambodia with Pol Pot. Anyone, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, anyone with a college education, anyone with an education above a fifth or sixth grader, they killed. They killed them all. They didn't care. Anyone who had an education was killed because those are the people who are smart enough, had enough gumption, enough intuitiveness, enough stick-to-it, be able to stick with things, you know, enough fortitude to oppose them. They wiped them out. They didn't ask questions. They killed them. They killed their whole family. They killed them all.
Well, in Cambodia, you could be executed for wearing spectacles because it indicates if you wore glasses, that must mean you're an intellectual.
Exactly. And in Russia, if you were too good looking, the Bolsheviks wanted to kill you. Particularly if you were a man. If you're a woman, they turn you into a sex slave like they have in Israel now. They're still kidnapping girls from Ukraine and Russia and using them that way over there. But folks, that is the red terror that is loose in our country right now. And Harold, I love your books. I've read them all cover to cover. I think you have the right idea. But I think that the red terror is everywhere now. And I think that we all have to watch ourselves and be looking for these things on a daily basis. Because once they make their move, once they start doing this en masse, it's all bets are off. I know if I have to fight back, I'm not going to fight back. You know, I'll defend myself against the blacks, the Mexicans. You know, they don't belong here anyway, but they're not the ones who caused the problem. They're not the real enemy. They're merely the side effect. The real enemy are these Bolsheviks that live among us.
Absolutely. Actually, I would rephrase that. The real enemy of the white man in North America is the United States government and the people who control the United States government. We keep thinking in terms of fighting against blacks or illegal aliens or homosexuals or whatever, but these are just symptoms of the disease. These people are here doing what they're doing because we allowed them, and by, quote, we, I mean the government that we allegedly elected to represent ourselves. I keep trying to tell people that at some point, if there is to be any hope for white survival in North America, let me put this bluntly, we are going to have to confront the United States and its armed men. And we so far have not found the moral fiber necessary to do that, but it's like when you've got an enemy who's pointing a gun at you, before you can get at him, the first thing you need to do is disarm him and get his gun away from him, and that's what we have to do. We have to get control of the government apparatus away from these people, and we have to somehow or other overcome the problem of their muscle men, the police, the military, the FBI, all these various federal spooks and secret agents. They keep Obama, the Democrats, and the liberals, and the Jews in power. If it were not for these muscle men who kept this regime in power, they wouldn't last a week. So they are actually central to the problem. A lot of people complain that I allegedly bait the FBI on my podcast and that sort of stuff. Not really. I'm not so much mocking them. I'm trying desperately to get through to them, if that's possible. I'm hoping that there are at least a few of those agents, a few of those cops, a few of those people who are listening out there with an idea towards doing the Northwest Front harm. I'm trying to get them to maybe think a little bit about what they're doing. Now, okay, maybe they just don't have any morality left. Maybe they have no souls left. They literally sold their soul to the company store, so to speak. Maybe it's useless, but I at least try. Somehow or other, we have to get through to these remaining muscle men, and many of them, if not the majority of them, are still white males. They wear the buzz cut, and they think they're doing it for mom, god, well,
Harold,
apple pie, let, and let good
me,
old red,
let,
white,
let,
blue.
Let me give you a data point. And that data point is you know, I'm finance editor for VeteransToday.com. I'm a contributor there as well. VeteransToday.com, the motto is the voice of the clandestine community. And that's really true because I get to talk to a lot of intel types, get to talk to a lot of what are called special operators, everything from Forest Rangers, all these type of guys. And to a man, they're sick of it. They're tired of it. They see what's happening. They hate what's happening. But to date, they have not had the reason to break with the chain of command, but it's getting really, really close. These guys are furious right now, furious with the mismanagement that's going on behind our government. They're getting it. They understand it. They don't like it. And it's not going to take much more for the chain of command to break. And when that happens, then maybe we can make a correction on this.
They're also mostly ruled or governed right now by political generals from the Pentagon. I know there's been a big move ever since Obongo came in to shift around and get rid of certain generals who are rocking the boat and whose loyalty to the regime might be dubious, which, of course, is the way it is in any third world totalitarian regime. First thing you do when you take power is you get rid of the potentially disloyal generals. I have heard rumors and comments down through the years about, well, maybe what will save us will be a military coup. I hope so. Maybe you're right. But again, you have to look, Mike.
Well,
who are the rank and file soldiers right now? Who are the rank and file?
I have to go back on you on this and say, whenever the Department of Homeland Security says that veterans and Ron Paul supporters and Tea Party members and sovereign citizens and you know, libertarians are the enemies of the state, we have to separate what is the state and what is the government, because the state and the country are two different things, and we need to be real clear about separating that out. And I hear our next break coming up. We'll be right back, more with Harold Covington. This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com, and today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Oh, great to be back.
Well, it's good to have you. You know, I mean, I try to have you on a regular basis because you and your message are one of the messages that has been actively repressed by the mainstream media. And what people need to remember is that this integration thing was forced on the American people at the point of a bayonet. 90%+ of the U.S. population didn't want it. Didn't want it. And yet we got it anyway. Then you look at Obamacare, 70%+ of the U.S. population didn't want that. And now look at going to war with Syria and Iran, 70%+ of the population doesn't want that. It's time for people to realize that we're no longer living in a democratic republic. We're living in a dictatorship.
Oh, and absolutely. The reason that the regime does these things is because Obama, now I say Obama, but it's not really him, it's the people behind him. Obama's just a convenient sort of tag word because for once the evil of government has a black face, which I think is an improvement from our point of view. But anyway, the reason that Obama does these things is because he has discovered that nothing will be done about it. The tearing point in my mind came about 18 months ago before the election, when he legalized the DREAM Act, or he, in essence, implemented the DREAM Act through executive order after Congress had rejected it twice. Now, that is about as clearly unconstitutional an act as could possibly be imagined, and nothing was done about it. He knows darn well that they're not going to impeach him, because if the remaining Republicans in the House impeach the first black president, the screams of racism would shake the very heavens, and the Republicans simply don't have that kind of moral courage. He knows he's not going to be impeached. He knows that nothing is going to be done, and he can pretty much do whatever the hell he wants up there, and so he's doing it. And we're all suffering the consequences. Obamacare itself, when it finally starts getting implemented this year, is going to be a train wreck of mammoth proportions. I'm having all kinds of problems with it just in my own personal situation, and I imagine these problems being multiplied by millions and millions of white American families who are, in essence, going to be stripped to the bone in order to pay for health care for many more millions of black people and brown people, many of whom don't have the legal right to be here. And it's a pure, straight redistribution of wealth, by which is meant redistribution of white people's wealth to people with black and brown skin.
It's more than that, Harold. It's redistribution of wealth, correct, but it's much more. It, for the first time, it gives the IRS has unlimited access without subpoena, without warrant, into all of your records, financial records and medical records. And this is really a scary thing, because you think the NSA spying was a big thing. I mean, do you really want the IRS knowing that you've got an STD? I mean, you know, you really think that that's kind of information that they're going to have your medical records? Do you really want them knowing that you only have $15 in your account, or that you've got $15 million in your account?
I write some news articles for another right-wing website, and I have been doing this for a number of years, and I recall time and time again writing up articles on news reports at the time about IRS snooping or drones or various surveillance techniques as the United States becomes a surveillance state, so forth and so on, all this, that all these warning signs that we've been getting for years that we were turning into a total, complete surveillance state, the object of which is to watch everybody all the time. And I would post these articles on this site, and then I would go on to the next. And see, our reaction when we hear about these things, and we've got plenty of warning, we don't have that excuse, but our reaction when we have received warning after warning after warning as to what was coming has been to leap to our computers and tap on the keyboards. We're discovering something which is, I think, kind of unique in history, that it is not enough to know that you're being tyrannized. It's not enough even to talk about the fact that you're being tyrannized openly. Very few tyrants have allowed the type of open discussion that we do have in the society on the internet and elsewhere. But what they discovered is that with Americans, at least, people will talk and talk and talk and do nothing. And the tyranny really doesn't care so long as their actual plans are not interfered with anyway. They found that it's possible to let the sheep keep on bleeding and chickens keep on cackling and running around in the barnyard, and all it is noise. Nothing is actually being done to prevent any of these things from happening. Nothing is being done to put a stop to this regime. Nothing is being done to remove these people from power and punish them. And they finally figured out that we're not going to do it, so they're just saying, hey, we're going to do, you know, let's just...
Well, Harold, if we go back to the Bolshevik and the Chinese Communist Cultural Revolution and what happened in Cambodia, you know who the first class of people to go are? It's your elected officials. Mm-hmm. So if you're a county commissioner, if you're a sheriff, if you're a congressman or a senator or a judge, you're gone. I mean, if you're not one of the insiders who is on the trigger side of the gun instead of the barrel side of the gun, you're gone. They're going to take you out. You will be the first ones to go, because they will decapitate what's left of a civil government in this country. That's what Bolsheviks do. People need to study what happened in the Bolshevik Revolution, read Solzhenitsyn, and really learn from him.
It's one of the things that has always saddened me and puzzled me about the way that white people have reacted to the past 60 years. We seem to be no longer capable of acting in our own best interests. Never mind morality, never mind the Constitution, never mind what's right and what's wrong. It is simply in white people's self-interest to resist extinction. You would think that this would be as obvious as the nose on your face, but apparently it isn't. Talk about fiddling while Rome burned. We're watching American Idol and Dancing with the Stars while our world burns around us. It's stunning to me how apathetic we become, how timid, how weak, how frightened, especially, and this really ticks me off, when our ancestors, the founding fathers of this country, gave us a tool to make sure that this very thing never happened, and that was the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights. the right to keep and to bear arms. We are in the very strange position right now of being a persecuted minority in danger of genocide, in danger of extinction, in danger of the loss of everything we have, and we've got stacks and stacks of guns sitting in our closets or in our gun cabinets, quietly rusting away. I cannot remember the last time in this country's history that one single shot was actually fired in defense of the white minority in this country, which was what we are now. I think it might have been the 1980s with the order. This whole situation, I have to admit, just flabbergasts me. The butcher is sharpening his cleaver and his knife, and he's about to come over to the pan and start yanking us out and cutting our throats, and we're sitting there with our noses in the trough, slopping like hawks.
Well, and believe me, we will be victims of kosher slaughter. We will be hung by the broken leg and while our throats are slit so we can feel as much pain and bleed out as slowly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The thing is, in my novels, I propose a solution to this, a territorial imperative. The solution to all of this is that white people must have a country of our own. Just us. These other creatures who have caused all of this mess cannot be allowed to live among us. A white homeland, an ethnostate, implies the one thing which is essential for white racial survival, and that is separation. If anything, history proves that the different races of mankind cannot live alongside one another, even in a situation like apartheid in South Africa, because eventually the walls of separation break down, and the contamination begins. Whites must live in their own countries, in their own societies, in their own world with as little contact as possible, preferably none, with the non-white and Jewish world. That is the only way that we are ever going to recover any mental, moral, or racial health, and the only way that we are ever going to replenish our numbers sufficiently to where we can have a fighting chance to survive on this planet.
Because that's a good point. I want to point out to people that at the beginning of World War II in 1938, approximately 30% of the world's population was white, and it's down to under 8% now.
Yeah, the demographics and the statistics are terrifying, and we just can't seem to get this through to these sheep that live on the average suburban streets, and like I say, they're sitting in their dens watching American Idol and Game of Thrones or whatever.
Harold, I admire your solution. I think it is some of the innovative thinking that I've heard so far. It's good. But let's just, for the sake of this discussion, let's say we bifurcated the country along the Mississippi River, mm-hmm. and everything to the west was all white, everything to the east was all everything else. You realize that everything to the east would be like Haiti within 2 to 3 years or less?
Well, like Florida is now. Like California is now. California's part of Mexico. Florida has become part of the Caribbean. I've been to Haiti, and believe me, you don't want to be Haiti. I would prefer any place else in Africa. If I had to be exiled or imprisoned someplace or just tossed down on the street, I would prefer any place in Africa itself rather than Haiti.
Okay, well, Harold, this is our top of the hour break. This is our long one. It's 7 minutes. So if you need to go grab a cup of coffee or a glass of water, now's the time to do it. Be back
okay.
in 7 minutes. We'll talk to you then. Thanks.
All right, see you then.
Good afternoon, welcome back. This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com, and today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back to the show.
Oh, always glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you. And, you know, one of the reasons I invited you to be on last Friday, whenever I had my mechanical issues, I guess, with the retaining clips on three universal joints being removed, which I found unusual. Here's the funny thing. I had my mechanic over, and we changed the clutch out on that vehicle not 2 weeks before, and I asked him, hey, he said, check out those universal joints. How do they look? He said, they're fine. Not going to fail? Oh, no, they're good. So I know this was tampered with. This is just not my imagination.
Yeah. They might, you know, let's not call it mechanical difficulties. Let's face it, somebody tried to whack you. Now, the question is, was it somebody working for the government or was it somebody with their own agenda? I mean, and again, I'm sorry to say, but anyone who speaks out these days, this is just part of the things that you have to worry about. It comes with the territory.
Well, I've got a lot of people who don't like me. I mean, the drug cartels don't like me because I'm critical of them. I want to legalize marijuana, take away 60% of their revenue day one. You know, so there's a lot of things that they're not going to be happy with me about. You know, the government, this, let me rephrase it. The state as it sits today, this criminal state, does not appreciate me because I'm a constitutionalist. That's also on the list of terrorists. But the reason I invited you on was to talk about this immigration reform issue. And it's really not an immigration reform. It's a capitulation, and it's a really destruction of the United States of America as a country, because we will be a third world dung heap like India or Mexico or some other place.
Or given California. That we have,
yeah, or California, given that we have a third world population. I mean, go through the Central Valley of California. Go through and see what you see. It's not very pleasant, not very nice. Go to South Central Los Angeles. See what you see. It's awful. It's awful.
Basically, we'll be turning into Brazil at best. This is another example of white people just simply refusing to act in their best interests. I'm referring to the Republican members of the Senate and the House. Now, never mind, again, all the moral aspects of it, or the legal aspects or anything else. The fact is that if these millions and millions and millions of illegals are legalized, we know darn well that they are all going to vote Democratic. And in essence, what the Republican Party is doing, they're cutting their own throats. They will never, ever see the inside of the White House again. Their congressional representation will shrink and shrink again, like as has happened in California. I remember a time 30, 40 years ago when California was one of the biggest Republican states in the country. Nowadays, you can barely find the Republican Party. They're sunk out of sight because the demographics have changed, because California has become one gigantic welfare state for Mexicans and illegals of various kinds, non-white minorities of various kinds, with a few wealthy Jewish movie stars at the top, and that's about it. When you change demographics to a third world template, if you will, what you get is something like California, Brazil, Florida is going the same way. I am sorry to say that Texas is probably headed in that direction as well. And so that right there is a large part of the Republicans' electoral college base shot to hell. And yet they're still doing, they're committing Harry Caray. We're sitting here watching the Republican Party disembowel itself in public because somehow or other, these idiots have gotten the idea that if they are nice to the Hispanics and they pass this immigration bill and let them bring in their cousins and their uncles and their nieces third time removed, blah, 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 that they can persuade these hordes of illegal aliens to vote Republican. And I really would like to know where they get this idea and what they were smoking when they got it. Because it's just not true.
It's a false idea. It is. And we have to speak up about this and get this out there because our elected officials, I look at John McCain, the traitor from Arizona. I mean, you realize he's the only sitting senator who has a congressional pardon for treason he committed during Vietnam. He committed treason. He was pardoned by Gerald Ford. Just how it is, he was elected to Congress 2 years after that. That's the history of John McCain. You look at Lindsey Graham, I mean, he's not a well-closeted homosexual. He just ought to come on and own it. Now that gay marriage is legal, I wonder what his partner thinks about that. But these are things that people have to realize. And, you know, all the orders for all of this, you know, the desire to do what's being done to this country and being done to many countries around the world doesn't come from here. It comes from the city of London, which is its own principality, if you will. It's its own country located within Great Britain. Just like
yes,
the Vatican.
I'm aware. I've actually lived and worked in the city of London and Bishopsgate. So, yeah, I know.
But that's where all this is coming from. And those are the people who are calling the shots. And it goes right back to the big bankers. I mentioned that article earlier about that guy, Frankel, who's the chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase, is now reappointed to the Board of Governors of the Bank of Israel. I mean, come on, folks. I mean, figure it out where the problem is. Figure it out. What are we going to do about it?
Well, what we're headed for in this country is a one-party state similar to what the PRI, the Party of the Institutional...
Well, we already have that. We already have a one-party state. We used to have two great parties. Now we have two minor parties with one platform because the Republican platform is no different than the Democrat platform today. It's no different. And the reason is because the top 10 donors to both parties are the same corporation.
If fact is that the Democrat Party is going to be the dominant party from now on, because what they're doing is creating an underclass that will be dependent on the political system, on the state, on the government, on the Democrat Party for the things that keep them going. EBT cards, welfare payments of various kinds, Obamacare, Section 8 housing, so forth and so on. And the fact is that even to be poor in this country isn't really to be that poor by world standards. Well, most of these people who live on the EBT cards and welfare payments and in the projects, etc., have things like functioning cars of a sort. They have their cell phones. They have their flat-screen TVs. There is no starvation in America, never has been. And by starvation, I mean like Ethiopia with skinny little 12-pound black children holding up their bowls. You don't get that kind of starvation here. You get malnutrition, especially among blacks, but that's just their bad eating habits. But the fact is that to be poor in America is to be actually comfortably well off by the standards of where a lot of these people came from. And so, needless to say, they are going to show loyalty to the party that gave them that. And even though it was the Republicans with their love of capitalism and their friends among the multinational corporations who brought many of the illegal immigrants here to begin with as cheap labor, the fact is, the perception will be among these people that the Democrats brought them here, legalized their status over the protests of the wicked, evil, racist Republicans, blah, 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 the whole Democratic liberal narrative. And in essence, by 2016 or so, it won't be necessary for the Democrats to cheat anymore. They will actually have created their own artificial majority by bribing the electorate, which, if you look at the history of the Democratic Party from Tammany Hall on down through Mayor Daley, etc., is what they've always done in this country.
Well, you're right about that, but I just lost my train of thought. Phooey. I hate when that happens. You distracted
well, it happens to me, too. We're getting old and senile.
You distracted me with a good point. But you look at this, and well, here's my point. My point was that after the Civil War, Lincoln, who was a Republican, was the one who freed the slaves. It wasn't the Democrats. In fact, the Democrats were segregationists up until the 1960s, whenever and George Wallace was a Democrat. He opposed integration. He opposed
violently. But yet,
because of the bribery, you know, the social welfare programs, the bribery, now most blacks are loyal Democrats.
If I could interpose a quick historical digression here, just to show you how political correctness sets into history, Lincoln didn't actually free any slaves with the Emancipation Proclamation. He only, quote-unquote, freed slaves that were in Confederate-occupied territory in 1863. What it was an effort to incite the blacks to rise up and revolt against their masters. But it was actually the 13th Amendment that, quote-unquote, freed the slaves, and that was after Lincoln was dead. But, and yet, we don't understand these things. That's one of the reasons I'm such a history buff. If we knew what happened in the past, if we knew where we'd been, then we would have a much better idea of where we are and where we were going. And I hear the music.
Yes, you do. Be right back after the short break. More with Harold Covington. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com, and today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest today is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. What do you think is going to happen? First of all, our governments give this propaganda. We've had 11 million illegal aliens in the country for at least 20, maybe 25 years. So I lived on the border. I know the area well. I know that they're coming over at least between 7,500 and 10,000 of them every night. Every night. That's what comes across that border. I've seen them. I've seen them with my own eyes. I've seen the drugs they bring into the country with my own eyes. I've witnessed this up close and personal. You know, I spent a year living out in a remote location in the Vigil Valley, which is in Pinell County, which is where J.T. Reddy is running for sheriff when he was murdered. Right. So don't tell me it's 11, maybe 12 million.
No, it's not. That's a ridiculous figure. I would say probably between 30 and 50, but the thing is, no one knows. I suspect if somehow or other we were able to get an accurate count, we'd be astounded.
Two years ago, Goldman Sachs gave their number was 35 million. That was 2 years ago. And now, since they're talking, Amnesty has gotten more and more. But here's what's going to happen, and I want your opinion on this, and that is, Once they're here and they have legal status and they can do what's called chain migration, where the first thing they're going to bring is a grandparent because they're going to get them on Social Security because it's free and right. They're going to get money in every month and they're going to get Medicaid and Medicare and all this stuff. Just forecast in the future. You're very future looking. So what do you think is going to happen to the rest of our lives? The rest of us, our lives, our futures, if this happens.
Well, the only way that the regime can support something like this, and matter of fact, they're reaching that point right about now, never mind the chain migration. I mean, the whole apple cart's about to tip over. In essence, what they're going to have to do is kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. The last remaining privately held wealth in this country is in the hands of middle-aged to elderly white people. What they're going to have to do is find some way to confiscate that wealth and, in essence, reduce white people to the same state of economic misery and dependence that the blacks and the browns and the other underclass is, which they're starting to do right now through Obamacare taxation. I don't know if you've actually looked at the situation with Obamacare, but anyone who is not in a preferred situation, in other words, they've got some kind of health coverage and they work for the federal government or they work for a Democrat union or for some other Democrat constituency group, and so they've been able to get a waiver from the administration. But anyone who's not in that position, just ordinary people, are going to be hit with either huge costs to buy health insurance from one of these exchanges or crushing fines when they don't. That's the situation I'm in right now. And I think there are millions and millions of white people who are going to find themselves in that situation, but they don't realize it. And again, this is redistribution of wealth, in essence, taking money from white people to give to blacks and browns in the form of more or less free health care. So that's one way that they're going to try to confiscate this last remaining privately held wealth in America, is through taxation-type tricks like Obamacare. The whole thing about Obamacare, it's not a program intended to bring health care to the masses. It is an excuse to commit other political acts that the regime wants done, including the seizure of the health care industry, driving private health insurance out of business so we can eventually all go to single payer, and above all, redistribution of wealth. Obamacare is the first in the major wealth redistribution programs that this administration will install, and that'll get worse and worse as their underclass gets bigger and bigger. They legalize the illegals. Once they are in permanent power, then again, given the fact that they have discovered that they can do anything they want to white people without meeting armed resistance, then they will just proceed to gut the turkey, to kill the goose that lays golden eggs, to confiscate, through one pretext or another, all of the privately held wealth in white hands. Now, what's going to happen when that's gone is that eventually system, say 50 years from now, 25 years from now, however long it takes, is going to finally, at long last, completely run out of money. No one will lend anymore. There's no more rich or middle-class white people that they can rob anymore because the white people are all living in Section 8 housing now themselves because all their wealth has been taken. And so at some point in this downward slide, whatever Jew is running the Federal Reserve is just going to have to hit the button and let those printing presses roll, because they will get to the point where all they can do is print more money because the system is unsustainable. You cannot continue to spend more than you take in year after year and make up for it with borrowings. That's what a lot of people do with their credit cards. They go wild on these credit cards and all of a sudden they end up looking at a $20,000 debt. Now, individuals can bankrupt out. Nations can't. And America especially can't. So the solution that the system will probably choose when it finally comes to the point when they run out of money will be let those printing presses roll, and there will then be massive hyperinflation of the Weimar Republic kind, of the Zimbabwe kind, where you have to take a wheelbarrow full of $10 million bills to the store to buy a loaf of bread. And what usually happens after that is some kind of major implosion. But one way or another, that's going to happen. It could be the economic crisis that produces it. It could be something political. It could be a foreign war. But the United States of America is going to break up 25, 30, 50 years from now, I don't know when, but sometime within the lifetime of those now living, there will be no more United States of America. We will be 4, 5, 6 separate nations at least on this North American continent, because this center cannot hold the level of incompetence.
Well, and right back more with Harold Covington.
A man who leads a life of danger. everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Whatever move he makes, and other chance he takes, odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man.
This is Mike Harris on RinceRadio.com. My guest today is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Okay.
I want to pull a little whiplash on you here. What about this mestizo, Zimmerman, who shot Trayvon Martin? It's becoming pretty obvious that Zimmerman may have been justified in his defense of his life. What do you think the outcome of this is going to be? What are the ripple effect across the country? What's your best guess?
As far as the case itself goes, I think the facts have pretty much well been known since it happened. There is no doubt that this guy Zimmerman shot this huge black delinquent in self-defense when the kid pounced on him and started beating the crap out of him. Even the prosecution doesn't question the essential facts. Basically, they just said that Zimmerman shouldn't have been carrying a gun and he shouldn't have been there and he shouldn't have shot the poor defenseless little Trayvon, blah, blah, blah. What this is, Mike, is a political effort on the part of the authorities in the state of Florida to prevent the blacks from rioting and embarrassing Obama and causing all kinds of property damage and that sort of stuff. I mean, when the incident originally occurred, you may recall that the police authorities in Sanford, Florida, and the local district attorney refused to charge Zimmerman because it was such a clear-cut case of self-defense. And it was only after immense political pressure was applied that some grand jury finally indicted Zimmerman. Right now, I'm kind of watching the trial. I was kind of amused by that fat, sloppy thing that got up there on, was it, I think, Friday. The Haitian girl that was Trayvon's alleged girlfriend was on the phone with him when the fight broke out.
She was a peach, wasn't she?
Yeah, right. Noticed immediately the liberals all ran to her defense screaming, oh, no, it's impossible for a white jury to understand where this young woman is coming from, blah, blah, blah. But the facts really just are not in dispute. And I'll tell you something else. The media is treating this, for all the world, like this guy Zimmerman is white. He's not. He's a half-Jewish mestizo. And yet, like for instance, when the incident first happened, they referred to him as a white Hispanic. They are just bound and determined to turn this into something racist or some kind of racial incident that can support Obama. And Obama himself, of course, leaped in with a comment to the fact that made it clear he felt that the Zimmerman guy was guilty of murder and he should be lynched, etc., which, again, is completely unconstitutional.
Obama
and out of line
said,
for president
if,
to do.
If I had a son, he looked like Trayvon.
Actually, given Obama's color, well, he probably looked a little bit more like Zimmerman. Zimmerman is actually quite brown when you look at him in a proper... I mean, he's obviously a Mexican, or actually, in his case, half Chilean, half Jew. So it's not as if this really is a racial thing in the sense of being black and white. I think it is interesting that Florida is one of those areas that's being taken over by Haitians and blacks, but also has a very heavy influx of Cubans and Mexicans now coming in. And I have always predicted that when the United States breaks up, the South is going to either become the Republic of New Africa or... the Hispanics that are there are going to successfully fight the blacks for control and probably re-enslave them or something. Anyway, what is going to happen if Zimmerman is acquitted is probably there will be rioting, and the liberal blogs like Salon and the Huffington Post will just turn backflips trying to explain it all away and claim that the verdict was a sign of wicked, evil, white racism and blah, 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 blah. I mean, we've been here before with the Jaina 6 and a few other recent examples of this kind of nonsense. But basically, the reason that Zimmerman was charged was, number one, to prevent the blacks from rioting. Number two, I've noticed that the liberals seem to have a special dislike for stand-your-ground laws. Now, this actually is something that could affect the rest of us. The crime itself is just a squalid little piece of street brawling. One guy was attacked, and he defended himself. Big deal. But the defense that Zimmerman is using is this stand-your-ground law, which is a very sensible law that says if you are legally entitled to be where you are and doing what you're doing, then you do not have to turn and run away like a coward if some thug comes up and starts menacing you or attacking you or anything like that. You can actually defend yourself. The liberal establishment is not comfortable with any kind of legal situation where white people can defend themselves against black crime, because black crime is a necessary deterrent to, you know, honkies from getting out of line under the present system. It's a psychological weapon that they have to have. Basically, if honkies get the idea that they can defend themselves against black criminals, then they might start getting the idea they can defend themselves against other oppressors. So the idea of a white man defending himself in any circumstances against anybody is just anathema to the liberals who run the society. And so they want to get rid of these stand your ground laws, and they might use this Zimmerman case as an excuse to bring pressure on the courts in the legislature in Florida and elsewhere. If Zimmerman is acquitted, like say, immediate rioting will probably supersede that, but that's another little item that I'm sure is on the liberal agenda somewhere on down the line, alongside things like mandatory vegetarianism and decriminalizing all sexualities, as they put it, et cetera, is getting rid of stand your ground laws or anything that allows a citizen to use lethal force to defend himself or his property. Because if a citizen has no right to use lethal force to defend himself, his family, or his property, then why does he need a gun? There's no point in giving him a gun or allowing him to own a gun if he doesn't have the legal right to use it, right? See, all of these little items on the agenda all intertwine. They all interconnect, and they all sort of support each other like a kind of a filthy honeycomb.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I just read today that in China, a mob of about 200 people armed with knives attacked the local police station and killed all the cops inside because they were tired of the oppression by the Chinese police. And so even if you take away the guns, people can only put up with so much oppression. And in China, they use knives to do it because you can't have a gun in communist China.
Well, gun control simply doesn't work. I lived in Ireland for almost 5 years, and I noticed that when they would arrest IRA men, either in the north or in the Republic in the 26 counties, they charge them with a couple of murders, a couple of bombings, acts of extortion, terrorism, membership in an illegal organization, all that sort of stuff. And as an afterthought, they tack on a couple of gun charges. These were some of the worst terrorists in the world at the time. They were actually using guns and bombs to blow each other up and shoot each other with. And they were all forbidden legally to own firearms, and they simply ignored the law. Well, duh, surprise.
Well, the way you look at ignoring the law today, I mean, drugs are illegal, but yet we have more drugs than ever. And you think those Mexican cartels for a minute would not smuggle guns and ammunition up here if they thought they could make a buck at it? Of course they would.
You think the Crips and the Bloods in Los Angeles and all those gangs in Chicago that are gunning each other down at the rate of 300 or 400 a year, if Congress passes some kind of gun confiscation law or registration law, you think all those gangs are going to say, now we've got to go register, give up our guns?
I won't go into
some of the parody I was going to go into there, but look, criminals, by definition, break the law. They ignore the law. They have no respect for the law. Why in God's name do we think that a law is going to get people to give up guns?
Which brings us back to illegal immigrants who have no respect for our law in this country. They don't belong here. They need to be deported immediately. We'll be right back, folks. More with Harold Covington. Harris on RinceRadio.com. Today is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My guest is Harold Covington. So, Harold, my question for you, we're in our last segment here. We got about 10 minutes left. What should people be doing, given the fact that this amnesty is not a done deal, but we're going to get some form of it? They're going to do something stupid again. I mean, I remember back in 86 when we were promised this is a one-time only, just one time, because we have these 800,000 illegal aliens living here. One time only. Please just let us. These people are good. They're hardworking. They're not good. They're not hardworking. They break the laws. They commit multiple felonies. Their identity theft is one of their biggest ones that they do when they get somebody else's social security number and ID and use that to go out and buy themselves a new pickup truck or something. And you know, they're not good people. They need to go home. And one thing I noticed is I watched the talking heads on like Fox News Sunday. I get so angry. By the way, I watched Fox News Sunday again. They had four Jewish women and one black guy. You can imagine the debate, and that's the conservative channel.
Males are quietly disappearing from society and from all visible positions of leadership and influence in American society. It's part of us becoming unpersons. It's very hard for a young white boy to get into college now. unless he has just super duper duper grades and grabs some kind of scholarship. You know, reverse discrimination is now becoming a way of life. White male college enrollment is dropping like a stone. So anyway, you're saying that these immigrants were hardworking, etc. Okay, maybe the first generation of immigrants will go out and sweat in the fields garden. But the problem is that the second generation becomes the gangbangers and the welfare mamacitas and that sort of stuff. We used to have a bracero system that brought them here. Let them work, fine, let them make some money to take back to Mexico, and then you put them on a plane and you sent them out of the country. The problem started when we began letting them stay in the 1950s and 60s after that Kennedy Immigration Act. As to what we should do, all right, I will tell you very simply what we need to do. We need to immigrate to the northwest of America and create a homeland of our own right here, because this whole country is going to break up. It is now impossible for us to recover it all because of our own sloth and incompetence and stupidity in the past. We're going to have to pay a price for that. So we need to make sure that when the breakup does come, the white man gets a piece of the pie. And that...
Harold, my earlier point about if we would bifurcate the country, you know, the east from the Mississippi east would be all black and brown. Mississippi west would be all white. If you do that, everything east is going to be, it's going to be like Haiti. Mm-hmm. And they're going to do like they did in South Africa. You know, there were no blacks in South Africa. There were Bushmen and Hottentots. And the whites built that country, but the blacks in the surrounding areas came in and overtook the place. And that's what's going to be going on. So I really think that there may be a flaw in your logic there, that if we think that just separating ourselves from them is going to keep these people out because they're going to want to come to take the better life that whites can tell that they cannot produce.
Okay, I'm a little bit restricted as to what I can probably say in public here, but that is what things like the Northwest Volunteer Army is for. I am not suggesting that we ask permission to separate. I am not suggesting that we ask permission, hats in hand, to set up our own country. The Patriots in 1775 on Lexington Green and Concord Bridge did not ask permission. I probably can't legally talk about methods here. What I can and will talk about and will never cease to talk about is urgent results, moral imperatives. The white man in North America must have a homeland where there are no blacks, Jews, homosexuals, liberals, or any of the other problem-causing people that have wrecked our civilization. We must have white judges, white police officers, white politicians who are honest. This is achievable, but it can no longer be achieved throughout the entire 50 states because we are simply too badly outnumbered, not only by the 100 million or so undesirables, but by the many millions of just basically white dumbasses who
with the liberals? I mean, because we've got liberals out there.
Yeah.
And they don't see the world the same way. What are we going to do? What's your solution with them? How do you handle it?
Again, I probably should not be discussing methods here, part of the problem in the society, Mike, is that there is no penalty for being stupid. There is no penalty for being an asshole. There has to be stupidity, blindness, stubbornness, deliberate betrayal of one's race and culture. These things have to be punished again. They're not being punished now, which is why people do them. Once again, it's the same as with the government. These liberals, like, I won't name anybody because that puts me into bad territory, but these liberals have found that they can do, say, anything at all, and there will be no consequences. The government of the United States has found that they can do or say or inflict anything on white Americans, and there will be no consequences. And so, needless to say, they're taking advantage of that fact. The government and the liberals hold American white people in contempt, and they should. What do you say about a people who will not fight, whose very existence is threatened, whose children are threatened, whose very world and everything they created is threatened, and yet they will not fight? We are not worthy of respect. That's the first step, Mike. White people have got to become worthy of respect again. And respect is earned by the shedding of blood. The problem in this country, in a nutshell, is that the white man no longer kills his enemies. And our enemies know it. They laugh at us and they oppress us, and eventually they're going to wipe us all out.
Okay, well, let me ask you another question, because just
how's that for a
raise? That was a rant. That was a good one. I give you an A-plus on that rant. So let's talk about some recent Supreme Court decisions. There was the University of Texas decision where they use race as an issue to allow students in. Is this the beginning of the end of affirmative action? And then the other one was the repeal of that federal oversight for the Voting Rights Act, where there's not going to be federal monitors anymore telling the states how they can or cannot amend their voting laws.
We were making a mistake when we continue to look to this system and to the legal and judicial system for relief from the problems that the government itself and that the nature of society has caused. We need to stop worrying about congressmen. We need to stop worrying about court decisions. We need to stop worrying about politicians. We need to stop worrying about elections. We need to simply start packing the moving vans, come to the Northwest, and make our own country, whether the politicians and the courts and the congressmen like it or not. We are white men, Mike. We can do anything we want if we put our minds to it. The question has never been, can white people defeat the powers ranged against us, and can we manage to survive? The question is, will we? Will we exercise the necessary effort of will to survive? If we continue to sit on the sofa and munch the salty snacks and guzzle the beer and stare at the television, no, we're going to be extinct in another 100 years, probably less than that. If we can somehow rise up from that armchair and become once again the type of men and women that our great-grandparents were, we still have a chance. I have devoted my life to trying to give our people that chance. And before we sign off, let me give a quick plug to our Northwest Front website. It's northwestfront.org. And if anyone's interested in our solution to these problems, go to the website, get in touch with me at nwnet@earthlink.net, and I'll be glad to take it from there for them.
Well, first of all, let me give your books a plug, because, Harold, you've written the Northwest series. Mm-hmm. And what are you, 4 or 5 books now?
Five books, five novels. Preparing.
And I tell you what, they're fun to read. It's a fun read. It's action. It's adventure. It's violence. It's betrayal. It'd be great movies. It would be a great set of movies. People would flock to the theaters to see these things. They're fun books to read. I highly recommend them.
I keep hoping we can persuade Mel Gibson to make a movie out of The Brigade, but I think he probably figures he's in enough trouble with the Jews already.
I think he is, and we know who owns Hollywood. Which means we ought to film it somewhere else.
Well.
Anyway, all right, here we got about a minute left here. What are your closing thoughts? What do you want people to do? What do you want to leave them with? What's the takeaway message?
Okay. The takeaway message is that we are now out of time. For the past 60 years or so, the American right wing has been fiddling while Rome burns. We have been wasting our time on dead ends, incompetent leaders, incompetent and inapplicable ideas, and so forth and so on. And we always were proceeding on the idea that we had infinite time left, that somehow or other it would all just come right in the end. And no, that's not going to happen. Things don't just automatically come right in the end. We're now out of time. The breakup of the United States is coming into many different countries, and we have to make sure that at least one of those countries is a white homeland, where our people can raise many more generations in safety and security, and where we can get our numbers up, because we are literally on the verge of extinction. Now, I believe that that homeland needs to be in the Pacific Northwest. Again, contact me, go to our website, www.northwestfront.org, hear what we have to say. Yes, we do have the solution. It may not be the one that we wanted when we all got started in this many years ago, but we've got the solution. And thank you for your time.
Harold, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being a guest. You're a great guest as always. And I'll be back tomorrow, folks. Stick with us. Be back same time, same place tomorrow with another surprising, interesting guest with other controversial views about how to make this country a better place for our kids. Be right back. Actually, be back tomorrow. Thank you. Bye-bye.